I think that's a good promise for all of us. I'm sure make you guys maybe grab your Bibles. We will use our Bibles to grow in relationship with Jesus Christ. Yeah. I have a pastor friend who in the last couple of years has decided that for him and for his congregation, what they really needed each week was the gospel. They needed was the gospel. He was just going to preach the gospels, and for a time, not the Old Testament, not Paul's letters, but the gospels. He noticed that it seemed that so much, too much of the Christian world, his congregation, even himself, that they didn't really know Jesus, not well. So what they needed most was Jesus. And I get that. I believe that what we need more than anything is Jesus, to get to know him, to sit and let him be our teacher. We're continuing to explore the Gospels, Gospel of Matthew today. This week we're reading from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 16. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. We know that Jesus had been preaching and teaching all throughout the countryside. And by now, people were starting to talk about him. There's all kinds of gossip about who this Jesus character is. Some say he's John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. Others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. And of course, we know that's not right. That's who people are saying that he is, but that's not who Jesus is. And so Jesus turns to the disciples and asks this question that stands for us for this 2,000 years. Who do you say that I am? In a sermon, the preacher Barbara Brown Taylor tells a story about a woman who is leaving church one Sunday morning, and she encounters a stranger on the street. And the stranger asks her, what is it that you guys believe in there? And the woman was caught off guard. She wasn't sure what to say exactly. She stammered and stuttered before saying something about worship, about faith and singing. After a few minutes, the man smiled and walked away. And the woman made her way quickly back into the church building and found the pastor and immediately told the pastor what had just happened. And the woman asked the pastor, what should I have said? And the pastor responded that it sounded like the woman did the best she could. And they both stood there kind of looking at each other, knowing that there was really more to say than was said, knowing that it really matters. It matters a great deal what we have to say. It matters. Who do you say that I am? This question that Jesus is asking is plural. It's addressed to all the disciples, all disciples. And for some reason, Peter is the only one who steps up to answer. Peter gets a lot of grief, but we have to give him credit. Jesus is asking this question to all of them, but Peter's the only taker. None of the others respond. It's like it's the first documented case of that famous 80-20 rule. Maybe you've heard about this 80-20 rule in the churches where 20% of the people do 80% of the work, right? And that's Peter. this is Peter, he's pulling the weight for the others. And he answers, who do you say that I am? He answers for himself who he says Jesus is. It's not what anyone else thinks, but him. And surprisingly, he actually answers the question right. You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. This fleeting moment with Peter is more significant than it seems on the surface, I think. For him, for us to stand up and confess and say for ourselves, to stake our lives on Jesus Christ, lays an essential foundation. This foundation on Jesus is essential for every Christian's faith. Each of us, for ourselves, has to put Christ at the center of our lives, keep Christ at the center of our life. No one else can do that for us. Jesus is our sure foundation. He's what we need more of, building our life on anything else, and it's sure to collapse. David Tinico, a pastor of a Methodist church in California, he told about watching this group of experts. They were building this big tower of fireworks, and they were about halfway through, and they ran out of this thick wire that was supposed to be kind of the backbone of the structure. And so for a bit, someone substituted this thin strand of rope so they could keep building until they could get more of that thick wire. And they kept working hard, and they were so busy that before long they forgot about this rope that had been substituted for the wire. And when they were almost finished, almost done, the whole tower just came crashing, tumbling down in a heap. And it goes to show, as they say, it goes to show that we must choose wisely what we build our life on. Jesus is our only sure foundation. Each of us for ourselves has to put Christ at the center of our lives, keep Christ at the center. So often Peter, in his headstrong, hard-headed ways, Peter famously misses the point, but in a brief moment of clarity, this time he gets it. And it's a good start for him, confessing Jesus, making Christ his foundation here, if only for a moment. I love to watch Peter in the Gospels because he's an honest look at the disciples. We can see some of ourselves, right? We can see some of our struggling selves in Peter. If we continue to follow Peter in his story, we know it's not long before he falters again and kind of goes back to missing the point. Just a few verses later here, and Jesus calls Peter Satan for setting his mind on human things instead of things above. And then we know before the end that Peter later denies Jesus, not once or twice, but three times. It seems there's this disconnect for him, for many of us. It seems that there's this disconnect between the things that we say, the things that we believe, and then the things that we end up doing. Peter gets it right for a minute, and then his actions say something else. And Peter's not alone in this. I'm not alone in this, I imagine. We as Christians can have this disconnect, this gap between the things that we say, the things that we believe, and then our everyday actions. Who do you say that I am? And then we have to try to close this gap and answer him better, not only with our words, with our lives, with the things we have, with our decisions, our kindness. Who do we really say that he is? Peter gets it right for a moment. But he doesn't really get it. We see. He doesn't really know fully who Jesus is. He's still learning and growing, like a lot of us, trying to answer this question from Jesus. But Peter answers. He answers and he's able to answer at all, I think, because he's been with Jesus, he's been walking with Jesus, spending time with Jesus, getting to know him for some time. He's been developing this relationship with Jesus, and so he could begin to answer this question. It's true with us, too. We have to begin to grow in this relationship with Jesus, to grow in our understanding of who he is, to answer this question. The professor David Lowe says that, like all relationships, you never know everything about a person the first time that you meet them. You have to be with a person for a while to really know the person. Many of you know that you can be married for many years and still not know everything there is to know about your partner. There's always something that will surprise you. And our response to Jesus' question, who do you say that I am? It's not easy. It involves a life of faith and action, years of walking with Jesus, getting to know who he really is. I was driving through Topeka, Kansas a couple years ago, and we wound up driving by the courthouse. And I saw that there was this group out by the courthouse holding up signs and picketing, and I immediately knew what it was. I felt suddenly mad and sick to my stomach all at once. In Topeka, Kansas, there's this group who calls themselves Westboro Baptist Church, and always they're picketing something, marching and holding up terrible, terrible signs that say, God hates, and fill in the blank. God hates some group. God hates blank. And it's horribly hateful. And I just think to myself, well, they really don't know Jesus at all, do they? Not at all. That's not the God I know. Fred Craddock put it like this. He said, do you want to know what God is like? He said, Jesus is what God is like. It's not enough to say, I believe in God, or I believe there's a God. Sadly, people hate in the name of God. People kill in the name of God. People are prejudiced in the name of God. So what kind of God do we believe in? And he said, I believe in the God who is presented in Jesus Christ. So what is God like? And then Craddock continues. He says, do you remember the time when there was this crowd gathered to hear Jesus, and they were a long way from home and hungry, and Jesus fed them? That's what God is like. You remember when he took those little children on his lap, and he blessed them, and he talked to them, and talked to their parents? That's what God is like. You remember when the leper came up and to Jesus and said, please help me, and he was made clean and healed. You remember that time when Jesus was with the disciples and they were arguing about who was the chairman and who was the greatest, and then Jesus, he took a towel and a bowl of water, and he knelt down on the ground in front of them, and he washed their feet. You remember that? That's what God is like. You remember when he took that old cross on his shoulder and he started up that hill to Calvary. That's what God is like. Jesus' question for each of us is the same. Who do you say that I am? And nobody can answer it for us, though the world needs to hear it. This last week, I saw a church friend post a quote that said, never underestimate the power of your own testimony. Never underestimate the power of your testimony. It's true. What we have to say matters a great deal. It's far more important, far more influential out in the world than anything I have to say. I highly doubt that any of your friends, any of your coworkers, or anybody cares much at all what I have to say, what some pastor has to say. But they do care what you have to say. They care what you have to say. The world needs to hear it with our words, with our actions. Who do you say that I am? Amen.